The 1832 United States presidential election is one of those moments in history that brings together big personalities, seismic political shifts, and a clear display of where the country stood at the time. It's an election that has been described as a landslide in several ways, but to understand why, you have to dig into the candidates, the electorate, the state of the nation, and the political context that shaped the era. 1832 was a landslide. Let's start with the dominant figure of the election, Andrew Jackson. Jackson was no stranger to the political spotlight. He had already served one term as president after his historic victory in 1828, which was marked by his appeal to the common man. By 1832, Jackson's popularity hadn't waned. He was a hero to many, especially in the South and the West, where his image as a self-made man resonated deeply. He wasn't just a politician. He was a symbol of American resilience and individualism. His first term had been tumultuous, characterized by battles with Congress, clashes over federal authority, and the beginnings of his infamous policy toward Native Americans, including the Indian Removal Act. Yet despite his controversies, Jackson remained wildly popular, particularly among those who distrusted the elites in Washington. On the other side of the ballot was Henry Clay, a man of significant political stature in his own right. Clay, a Kentucky senator and former Speaker of the House, represented the National Republican Party. While Jackson was the champion of the common man, Clay presented himself as a statesman of refinement and vision. He was a major advocate of the American system, which proposed federal investment in infrastructure, protective tariffs to foster industry, and a strong national bank. Clay believed in a unified economic strategy to strengthen the nation, but this platform put him at odds with Jackson's supporters, who were deeply suspicious of concentrated federal power and institutions like the Bank of the United States. And speaking of the bank, it was the elephant in the room during this election. The Second Bank of the United States had become a lightning rod for controversy, largely thanks to Jackson's relentless attacks. Jackson believed the bank represented the interests of the wealthy elite at the expense of the common citizen. In his eyes, it was a corrupt institution that wielded too much influence over the economy and politics. Clay, on the other hand, was a staunch defender of the bank, seeing it as essential to maintaining a stable national economy. This issue crystallized the deep ideological divide between the two men and their supporters, and it became the defining debate of the 1832 campaign. To make things even more interesting, this election saw the rise of a third-party candidate, William Wirt of the Anti-Masonic Party. This was the first time a third party played a significant role in a presidential election. The Anti-Masonic Party was born out of widespread distrust of the Freemasons, a secretive fraternal organization that many Americans believed wielded undue influence in politics and society. Although Wirt himself wasn't a particularly strong candidate, ironically, he was a former Mason. The party's presence highlighted the growing sense of unease and conspiracy among segments of the electorate. Now, let's talk about the electorate itself. This was a time when the political landscape was undergoing significant change. By 1832, many states had adopted universal white male suffrage, removing property requirements that had previously restricted voting rights. This expansion of the electorate played directly into Jackson's hands. His populist appeal resonated with these newly enfranchised voters, many of whom were farmers, laborers, and frontiersmen who saw in Jackson a reflection of their own struggles and aspirations. Meanwhile, Clay's message tended to appeal more to the business community, industrialists, and the educated elite, a narrower base compared to Jackson's broad coalition. The state of the nation in 1832 added another layer to the dynamics of the election. The United States was in the midst of rapid economic growth and westward expansion, but this progress came with growing pains. Regional tensions were on the rise, particularly between the North and the South. The Tariff of 1828, known as the Tariff of Abominations, had sparked fierce opposition in the South, where it was seen as unfairly benefiting Northern industries at the expense of Southern economies. This issue would come to a head in the Nullification Crisis of 1832, with South Carolina asserting its right to nullify federal laws it deemed unconstitutional. Jackson's firm stance against nullification, while controversial, reinforced his image as a strong leader who would not allow the Union to be torn apart. When the results came in, Jackson's victory was undeniable. He won 219 electoral votes to Clay's 49, with Wirt picking up just 7. Jackson carried 16 states, while Clay managed only 6, and Wirt just won Vermont. In the popular vote, Jackson secured 54.7%, compared to Clay's 37.4% and Wirt's 7.8%. This resounding win solidified Jackson's dominance in American politics and demonstrated the strength of his appeal across much of the country. So, why do we call this election a landslide? For one, Jackson's electoral margin was enormous. Winning 76% of the electoral vote left no doubt about the mandate he had from the American people. But the landslide wasn't just about numbers. It was also a landslide in terms of ideology. Jackson's victory was a triumph for the Democratic Party he had shaped, which stood for limited government, states' rights, at least in theory, and the interests of ordinary Americans. It was a defeat for Clay's vision of a more centralized federal government and a managed economy. It was also a clear rejection of the Bank of the United States, which Jackson would go on to dismantle during his second term, a move that reshaped the nation's financial landscape for decades. The 1832 election also marked the beginning of the modern political campaign. This was the first election in which national political conventions were held to nominate candidates, a practice that has become a cornerstone of American democracy. Jackson's Democrats and Clay's National Republicans both held conventions, as did the Anti-Masonic Party. These conventions helped to formalize party structures and mobilize voters in ways that hadn't been seen before. Ultimately, the 1832 election wasn't just about who would occupy the White House for the next 4 years. It was a battle over the direction of the nation, the role of government, and the power of the people versus the elites. It was a snapshot of a young, growing country grappling with profound questions about its identity and future. And in Jackson's overwhelming victory, we see not just a landslide in votes, but a seismic shift in the political and cultural landscape of America.